Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, not only are we having reviews of Shell and the Smashing Machine and Good Boy, he's a good boy, but we're also going to talk about the best villains of this century. So let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today are my fellow hosts, Troy Heinrichs.
Yo, yo, what's up, everybody?
Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello.
And yeah, this is the third episode. We've done two other episodes on the first quarter century because we're in 2025, so it's the first 25 years. And we did best TV shows and best movies, and I don't think Amanda was on either one of those episodes. Is that correct?
That might be true.
I'm trying to remember. I don't think so.
I don't think she was. Do you remember being on an episode
actually,
where we talked about the duck?
That's why I'm saying I don't think so.
All right. Well, thanks for playing along. We really appreciate that.
Alzheimer's apparently kicks in at 25 years.
Yeah, right? Jeez.
How old am I?
Old enough to remember the last 25 years. You've been alive throughout them.
Yeah, I have.
Yeah. Yep.
Short-term memory loss is a thing.
It is.
Hey, how about the next 25 years? We're going to have a bunch of AI actresses. Because now we have AI creations getting representation.
Well done. Taking my thunder there.
You like that? Good. That segue? That was good. What do you think about this idea that there is a Tilly Norwood is a creation? It's literally an AI creation that is being shopped around and supposedly won't take the jobs from human actors, but she looks like AI D'Armas. All right. She is very much a very attractive young digital creation.
I mean, the hard part about this is how do you use it in a film, right? So like it's in a computer, it's on a screen. Do you green screen it in and it's always a green screened version? Can they move around enough that it's going to match the actor's movements in the mocap? I don't think using an AI actor or actress in this case is a bad thing, especially if you're trying to look for a very specific style or part or whatever, because you're still going to need someone to voice over it. So you can leverage like older people that may not be out of work, right? Or might not want to work or just might work very little. You could leverage their voices, but then use an AI body double basically in order to put it in the movie. So no, I think this is a way that you can keep older talent working as voiceovers for these people, whether that's weird or not, or they got to digitize the voice or change it a little bit. But I think there's ways that you can create character voices, and it may open up new work for new people that do character voices that can't get hired today.
I don't know how that would happen. I mean, these are creations that can create fully formed performances to some degree. And eventually it will get there to where, I mean, you can already see it in like 8 second clips where they're getting pretty close to where, oh, that looks real. I mean, you see it all over the internet. They're getting to a place where this is going to happen. And what I want to stress, and I think this is an important clarification, both Troy and I work in IT to a degree. Amanda still trying to figure out where the unmute button is on her microphone, so she doesn't work in IT. But I will I will tell you that one important factor of AI that often gets glossed over is AI is not a creator per se, okay? So it doesn't actually create anything new. What AI does is it takes what exists and creates off of that. So, you know, it can take hundreds or millions or whatever lines of dialogue from other actors, other performances, other visual cues, things like that, nuances, tics, character tics, things like that, and then combine that into essentially a creation, but it's not creating fresh. Like it's not reinventing anything. AI never invents, right? AI takes what exists
yet
and puts it together. That's what AI does. And too often, I think people just think, oh, it's creating this. Well, no, when you really think about it, it's, and SAG kind of put it to a press release. And I should say it's SAG, the Screen Actors Guild. They had a press release that I think is actually pretty interesting. It says, to be clear, Tilly Norwood is not an actor. It's a character generated by a computer program that was trained in the work of countless professional performers without permission or compensation. It has no life experience to draw from, no emotion, and from what we've seen, audiences aren't interested in watching computer-generated content untethered from the human experience. I don't know about that last part, but the first
part animation
are correct. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff where I would justify AI could, and computer-generated applications would be absolutely beneficial. But that's the thing. Even animated that's created a lot of that as original. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I think what people don't fully realize, because I actually have a friend who does AI stuff over in Poland. He does the work globally, and he was explaining it to me not that long ago to help me understand, because it related to the lawsuit against Workday in terms of their AI and the recruiting process. So I was talking to him about how it works, and you can create anything or you can generate anything is how I guess we should phrase it. It's an input, but it's using inputs from what already exists,
right?
What you're telling it to do, and then it meshes it together to give you what it gives you. So there's no self-creation that is happening through AI. It's reliant upon data that already exists.
That's what
you are basically filtering. But I'm saying it in dumber ways for people who don't understand IT.
Okay.
And at some point it's actually just a copy, because you just go in there and you're like, yeah, I don't like that answer. Yeah, I don't like that answer. I don't like that until it gives you the answer you want. And then you just confirmation bias.
I mean, I can't tell you how many logos I've made, and other people love to say that they made this. I created this. I'm like, well, you did. And you just you put it, don't get me wrong, I'm not knocking it, because it makes some cool stuff. Everybody's using AI right now. ChatGPT is very beneficial, et cetera. But there are a lot of aspects to it where it's just but it's I made for my fantasy football, right? I think it's Escape from New York or something themed. And I created a logo based with Snake Plissken and mesh with the Packers or something like that. It's some stupid thing. And it looks great, but it's pulling from all the different places and merging those into one. I can't sell it. That's not real. And that's kind of what SAG is trying to say. They're like, this isn't real. This is stealing from other. They're saying this is borrowing, stealing, whatever, but it's not paying the actors for the performances that it's borrowing from. And I do think that's a real problem. That's a very complicated slope to be on. But I also say, whenever things like this happen and people stomp their feet and say, no, 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 it feels like old man yells in a cloud, right? Because the technology's coming. It's, you need to find a way to work with it. I'm not saying that we should have AI actors and da-da-da. I'm saying they need to find a way to work with it and optimize the technology, because there's a lot of cool aspects to it. I don't want Ex Machina.
Or the other one. Which is where that we saw, what was it, the artificial...
Her? Was it her?
No. The one, the...
Westworld?
The robot that was helping catch bad guys.
RoboCop?
No, the kid.
Definitely RoboCop.
The kid movie, the one where it takes place in the single room, and it's the AI that's helping them,
Oh, jeez, God, what was that? The Artifice Girl. The Artifice Girl.
Like that, this could work for a movie like that, where it's literally she's on the screen for the entire movie, and then you could just have her have this up on a TV having that conversation, or something like War of the Worlds with the Cube, right?
We don't need anything they could have made a good one. They could have made a good movie with that instead of what we got.
Well, I mean, Tilly could have been used instead of Ava and saved Ava's career. I don't know.
It's just, it's an interesting conundrum that we're going to have to reckon with at some point, right? Like, even fans, filmmakers, obviously, but fans, and there's a lot of computer gurus out there that are fast working to make this a reality. And I think SAG and all of legislators and whatnot need to get ahead of it and start regulating some AI before it gets out of control. But that's another topic for another time. I want to talk about evildoers. You guys want to talk about some evildoers?
Sure. Let's do it.
Let's get excited, because it's the first quarter century. We've had a lot of great villains. So we're going to talk about the villains of the century so far, and who really stood out to us, who we're huge fans of, who are our top 10 for the most impactful villains for our purposes. And then we also have a listener top 10 from a poll, which is probably pretty accurate to what people out there in the internets would say are the top 10, but I'm sure our lists are going to be a little different. So we're going to go now. Do you want to go like round robin 10, 9, 8, 7, or do you want to do all your list at one time?
I think we should do our whole list and talk through it.
Okay.
Cause then we're not repeating the same talking points.
Now we might have some duplicates on there though.
Yeah.
So just mark your thing off when it.
No, duplicate it still counts. My list. I'm going to have who I want.
You can
want,
still
man.
Say it, but you're going to have less to say about it when it comes up. Guys, now, let's just go.
Can I ask you a question? All right. Well, don't rush me. All right. Calm down.
Jeez. She's all villainous up for
sure. Man, sounds like a little Calvin Candy going on here. I don't like it. All right. So now I'll just reference random villains as I go so I can get my honorable mentions in. Can I ask you a question when we're talking about the villains? When you're going through your list, you're trying to figure out like the top 10, and this is TV and film. We said villains and entertainment is kind of how we're going. So it's TV and film, not just one or the other. And we're going to have a couple more episodes as we go for the rest of the year where we're going to touch on some like first quarter century thing. I'm sure we'll do heroes and maybe some other stuff. But because this is the first episode.
Holiday movies.
Got to do holiday movies. Got to, yeah. Right? But we're running out of things to do it on, so let's slow down. We only got so many episodes for the year left. But it's the first one of October, and October says to me villains. Doesn't mean horror, it just means villains. I like villains.
It's an lovely whiplash.
Was it easy for you to come up with your list, or was it a struggle bus? Do the kids say that still, Amanda?
I don't think so, and I don't know. I'm not a kid. I'm not part of it. There's so much lingo I don't understand anymore.
Fire.
That one I understand.
Okay, that's more your generation.
That's fine. All right. Yeah. No, it's not my generation, but I'm alive through it. So
you're stealing it. You're co-oping it? You're AI-ing it?
If I have to.
And I'm pretty proud of AI Darmus, and nobody laughed, and I'm really kind of pissed about that. I'm going to trademark it anyway. But go ahead. So
you didn't have the visual AI version of Tilly for the podcast because it's only an audio show.
Yeah, if you see her, you're like, oh, I get it. Yeah.
That's our problem. We're not fully in this century.
I don't want to do a YouTube video. I don't.
They, you know what? Everyone listening, you should thank him for that in advance.
Wow.
It's true.
You could off.
Suck it.
Come on, so much your list.
I thought it was manageable. I thought it was easy to a degree, but the only difficulty is then like narrowing it down. And do I base it off of my preferential top 10 or do I base it off of what I think everyone else is going to choose from like its largest impact standpoint? So that was the only questions that really came up through it is trying to narrow it down and also not going with recency bias. You know what I mean? Like there are some things that it's hard to say, is this of the best if it just came out in the last few years? So I have to, you know, make sure I'm not pulling another Christopher Robin. If you understand that callback.
Don't doubt yourself. Like if these are your picks, then, you know, it's fine. It really is.
I'm confident in them. I feel like I have good picks. I'm just saying.
I'm doubting one of yours.
Not everybody's going to agree.
That's all I'm saying. I'm doubting one of yours.
You're doubting one of mine?
Yeah, you told us earlier. I'm probably going to come at you on that one a little bit too. But you want, it's your list. You justify it and we're good. That's all I'm going to say. How about that?
Let me go check our messages. Clearly, I don't pay attention to you guys.
You're going to find out. Why don't you start first, then we can get to it. How about that? Before you get there, like, Troy, what about you? Mine came pretty quick. Like, I actually had like 15, and I'm like, crap, now I got to whittle this down.
I had a good list, but I felt like, same as Amanda, that it was kind of recency bias. So I just went back and was like, oh, yeah, like, that makes sense. Yeah, like, I like that one, too. So, yeah, I got a couple good ones, I think, that'll show up that'll... maybe like, oh, I didn't realize they were a villain.
Okay. Fair enough. All right, Amanda. Unless Troy, you guys fight it out. Who wants to go first?
I'll go.
He's chivalry.
He loves to be
chivalry
first.
Chivalry is dead in this house.
It's completely dead on this podcast. We are here with equality, equity, and equality.
Oh, love it. I just want to.
Wasn't even hesitation.
I was gonna show her how it was done so that when we get to her one that I'm gonna actually like combat against as being a villain.
Okay.
You know, I'm at least have a rubric to go against.
I don't care. Troy, you can go first. That's fine.
I'll start with this one just to get it off the table because Aaron will be like, oh my God, again. But Ben Linus in Lost, super great villain.
That's fair though. I mean, that's a good villain. I would say that belongs on a top 30 list.
I mean, the line that I always come back to when I talk about Ben Linus is in season two when he's sitting there and he's just like, got any milk? And I was just like, that guy is so bad. Even though you don't really think he's bad at that point. Very creepy. He's
a great, great bad guy.
But it's a great arc to watch him go through because like we always talk about on this show that villains are the best when they think they're doing the right thing and then do any means necessary to do the right thing and then just end up doing all the wrong things. And so like where Ben's journey goes in season five and season six and then eventually at the end, then you're just kind of like, you feel for the guy and you're just like, yeah, you fucked up, dude. So, yeah, that's my first one. The second one that I have is probably one where I was like the most blown away.
Are these in order, by the way, or these are random?
No, just random. This one I was like, when it happened, I remember sitting in the theater just dumbfounded with jaw on the floor. And that was the best line, I think, of the entire movie. When he's like, the kids used to make fun of me. They called me Mr. Glass. And you were like, oh, shit, this is a comic book movie. Mm-hmm. What? But Sam Jackson playing Mr. Glass and Unbreakable, just skirting the thing. I think it was 2000, so it counts. But that character was so good because the entire movie, you think he's like best friends with David. Like he's looking out for David. He's there for David. He's supporting David. And then, boom, he's the guy that's blowing all the shit up. I'm like, what?
That's a really good pick. Yeah, that's a good call. Yeah, that was an excellent choice. And Sam Jackson, is it sad that you could name like seven characters that he's done that qualify?
I don't know if it's sad. It's definitely impressive.
Well, yeah, I don't think of him as a villain as an actor, but man, he has done a lot of villainous roles. I mean, and he's just so good at it.
And he still makes everyone fall in love with him.
Absolutely.
Where you're like, I want every second of Sam Jackson on my screen that I can get.
I felt terrible in Unbreakable. For him as a character, like he's hard not to be empathetic to, even when you know his plight, it's hard not to be empathetic to him, I would say, which is impressive.
And don't forget Sam Jackson's first character, like first big movie break. You know, he was a villain as he robbed a McDowell's.
True. I mean, he's
Coming to America.
Yeah. Coming to America. I remember that. He's done a lot of them. Yeah. And everything Tarantino, right? You've got so many Tarantino movies you could throw in there. AK-47, you absolutely positively got to kill everybody in the room, except no substitutes.
I mean, most of them you could throw in there.
It's true. Steven and Django Unchained. Oh my God. He's so terrible.
Oh, yeah.
So terrible.
The third one, I stayed in that same franchise and went right to the next movie in Split because James McAvoy in that role.
That's a good one.
Like, oh, so creepy, yet so good, yet so lovable, yet so like, what the F is that going on?
He truly hits all of the emotional range.
And again, like he is troubled because of the situation he was put in against his will. So he's just trying to like find himself or find what is inside of himself at the end of the day by going through all of these different characters as his multiple personality disorder.
He is, James McAvoy, my opinion, top five most underappreciated actor of this century. I just feel like he is never, ever appreciated for how great he is. That movie, Split, is
a prime
example of how talented he is. And I just feel like he's never in the conversations with the greats, right? He just isn't. And I think it's a shame because he's so freaking talented. And Split is awesome. Yeah, great, great call.
This one's a little bit of a spoiler.
Is this Josh Hartnett in Trap? Are we going to stay in M. Night Shyamalan territory the whole time or what?
No, this one's coming out of the snow, like out of the blue, just like hit you like a rock, like a potato.
Okay.
But on a different planet.
Like a potato?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's Matt Damon. Matt Damon in Interstellar.
Oh, you're tying it in a Martian. I see what you did there. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Was he a villain? Was he a villain?
Yeah, he was basically, I need to get off this planet. I need to get back. I need to do all these things. And he trapped, they trapped him basically on that planet. In order to get there. So they had to burn extra fuel in order to pick him up and it almost jeopardized the mission. So if it wasn't for him like losing his shit, you know, then a mission would have been fine. But because he loses his shit and actually tries to kill the people on the planet, it's like, okay, dude, Like, I know you're trying to do the right thing, but you're doing it the wrong way.
That's interesting.
That makes you a villain.
And also, it just goes to the old online theory, stop trying to save Matt Damon. People die.
Right. We spend more money putting Matt Damon into space.
I mean, that one is, I mean, wouldn't you say it's more of a good man who just lost it? Versus,
isn't that what most good villains are?
Okay. Yeah, that's true. Okay. No argument. You win. You win. Fair enough.
All right.
Interesting choice. Okay.
I'm going to jump to Taron Egerton of Recency Bias and Smoke, especially when you understand how the show ends at the end of season one. There's a big reveal that you're kind of like, oh, snap. Like, I didn't think that was going to be the reveal that they were going to, but that was what it was.
Did you say, oh, snap?
I did. It's a real interesting reveal that if you understand the character as the show progresses, when you get to the end, it makes sense. And because of that, you're kind of like, oh, it's one of those, I feel for the guy. Like, he's just trying to be seen, trying to be heard, trying to be understood. And he just goes about it all the wrong ways. So yeah, excellent villain.
Good deal.
Bill Skarsgård, obviously, as Pennywise, coming back excellent to reprise the choice. Role.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, Tim Curry, right?
Better or worse than Tim Curry? I know it's not fair, but
it's different. You know, Tim Curry was the 1980s scary. This is like current time scary, and scary in a different way. Scary in the, he actually feels like he lures you in. Like, he's actually like, oh, he's interesting. I want to check him out. I want to maybe get a balloon. And then you're like, oh shit, I shouldn't have done that. So I think Bill's really captured the fear that Pennywise invokes on the children in a different way that Tim Curry did. Tim Curry was more of like the clowny clown, you know, where Skarsgård truly is the evil, the pure evil that sits behind Pennywise himself.
Yeah.
This one will come out of left field.
Before you go on, I just want to say, like, it's, I always give it extra credence, I guess, when, and he's not on my list, but he's like just outside of my list. Like, Pennywise is right there. I mean, he's right on the cusp. But that's, I think a lot has to do with part two, just because I didn't love chapter two. But I'm always impressed. Number one, he can do that thing with his eye. That's like natural. That's not a special effect. That's creepy on its own. But to come and actually like reframe a character that is so, even though the original miniseries wasn't great, Tim Curry's role in it was. And to come and like take that on, it's kind of like, you know, the Joker. I'm sure we'll talk about Heath Ledger at some point, right? It's just like coming in and taking a performance that is so beloved and then making it your own, which is what he did. That's the most impressive part of that performance.
Yeah, yeah.
Because people didn't think about Tim Curry when they're watching it, and that's hard to do.
Agree. This one, Cloverfield fans went into the second Cloverfield movie expecting a Cloverfield movie, did not get a Cloverfield movie. They got a Trapped in a Bunker escape movie because didn't realize that the man holding you hostage in the bunker was the villain in one John Goodman.
I had totally forgot he was a villain. I haven't seen that in so long, but you're right. He was very good. I'm surprised he made your top 10. Though. You loved him that much.
I love the movie that much more than either of the other Cloverfields, because I felt like this wasn't a Cloverfield movie. I felt like this was a survive the bunker, get the hell out. And then when you get the hell out, of course, the aliens attack because it is a Cloverfield movie. But you don't realize like what Goodman's character is going to do to you until it happens. And then you're like, oh shit, we in trouble.
Yeah. And he was so terrifying.
So terrible.
Good call.
Especially because in so many of his other roles, at least that I've seen, he's endearing.
Yeah.
So he went from comedy, this endearing, like cute, funny old man type of thing to creepy, scary, messed up.
I mean, even in Big Lebowski, he's endearing. Like, he's terrible, but he's still endearing. He's just, this was menacing. It was very well done. Yeah. Good call. Yeah.
I mean, and Patrick Stewart is a great character inside of the X-Men, right?
Mm-hmm.
Playing Professor Xavier. But Ian McClellan's performance as Magneto.
Yep.
Like, that whole sequence of when he's Magneto for all of his movies is so good in that role. I mean, yes, he'll be Gandalf forever, but, you know, Magneto is is pretty close to the Gandalf.
Yeah, I mean, and he's so much better than Michael Fassbender. And Michael Fassbender's great, but he's just so much better at it. I mean, Ian McKellen, especially in his prime like that, man, he was so good. Just so good.
And plugging James McAvoy, like, I don't think anybody would ever come close to Patrick Stewart, but James McAvoy was a pretty good Xavier.
Sure. Yeah. I'm with you.
And then around out 9 and 10, same person, two different roles. And that is the Christopher Lee. One is Count Dooku and one is Saruman from The Lord of the Rings.
Interesting. Okay. See, look at you getting an honorable mention.
No, it's 9 and 10. That's not an honorable mention. That's the list. He's so good in those two roles that he gets two spots.
You think Dooku is that good?
I think Dooku is the most interesting Sith, Darth, whatever you want to call him. Take away my Star Wars card. I don't care. Nobody watches it anymore anyway. But I think he's the most interesting of the dark side, even more than Vader, even more than Palpatine. He's the person that's like, he learned from somewhere else and has a different style to him that it's like, you almost want to believe him and be on his side until you're like, oh shit, this is a bad place to be, which makes him a better villain.
Okay.
Especially by the third movie for sure.
Hey,
right. And then Saruman, of course, right? The entire time he's talking to Gandalf and you're just like, hey man, we're hanging out like bros, like old times. And it's like, like, oh bro. Yeah. But then I got this giant ball over here with his eyeball stares me down all day and fucks up my brain. So
fair enough.
Christopher Lee was really good in that one. And then he's still, even at the end, just batshit crazy, you know, at the start of Return of the King until he falls off the tower.
Sounds good. Good list. Is that your whole list?
That is all 10.
That's a great list. Amanda, can you top that, you think?
Well, apparently not according to Troy.
She's got 9.
Let's hear your list. Let's see what you got.
So I have a mix of TV and movie.
That's fine.
I tried very hard to make sure that I was blending and doing like a good mix of both, because otherwise I think I could easily fall into TV too much, because I just watch more TV than I do movies at this point.
So that's why I picked movies, because I thought you would do more TV.
Hey, oh, dude.
It's your list. I just did what I thought were the best. I don't know what you guys are doing, but you do you.
Okay, so one of the first ones that I had on here and these are not in a particular order, is from Handmaid's Tale, and that is Aunt Lydia.
Oh, man, yeah.
Because in this world that is so dark for women, you have this, what could be seen at times as a caretaker, right? She's there trying to keep you in line, and she's very aggressive and evil at times with it, for sure. But then there are other times where she has this level of sympathy for you or for one of the girls. And that's what makes it so difficult to see how evil that she can be at times. And you're not really safe with her. You can't find reprieve with Aunt Lydia. And even just woman to woman, you know, you want that to be like a be a girl's girl. She's not. And she makes it terrifying to know that you can't trust people in that world. So that was my first one.
That's the one I fundamentally disagree with.
Why?
Aunt Lydia?
Because Aunt Lydia was just as brainwashed as the handmaids themselves. She thought she was serving God. She thought she was serving the man. She thought she was doing what she needed to do to stay alive herself. So she was just as a manipulated person as the rest of them. So when you get to the end of her story, at the end of Handmaid's Tale, which is very recent, so I won't spoil it, I think there's a turn in her character that doesn't necessarily make her what would be the villain in that regard.
I think we all know that there's outside influence that leads her to where she's at. But I think because she still consciously makes that choice, like there are moments that are things that she's let go of other things. She could let go of those things. It's in private. She could have, and I'm sorry, I don't have a great example at the top of my head, but she is a character who continues to make that choice, not just in public when she has to, but also in private. Mm. And she at moments, I feel you can see the coldness in that character's eyes, that it's not something where it's just a brainwash and she hates what she does every day. Sometimes maybe she does, but other times she's molded into that character so deeply that it's hard to not see her as a villain, especially from the handmaid's perspective. Like, I get where you're coming from, girl. I get it. But also, Like, you're just perpetuating that, and we can't use that as an excuse.
Ooh, love it.
The next one, I think it even surprised me for a second, but I was trying to think about moments that truly horrified people in a very realistic way, where when you watch that, you were like, this is just evil. And that's from Get Out and the Armitage family.
Oh God, that's so good. I was teetering with them on my list too. So great choice.
Yeah, I just find, I mean, obviously the story and the film itself is just, I felt like it was mind-blowing in terms of where it went and how these characters unraveled and the tension and the scenes and the sequences with all of the evolution of the story. But it really just had a way of making you feel very unsettled, both from like a horror, I'm watching a horror movie standpoint, but also from the realism standpoint where you're like, yeah, like, there's some whack people out there, man. You just never know. And it's, ooh, I thought it was horrifying.
That's good.
Another horrifying character who is actually to some degree iconic, I would say, in that world is from American Psycho, Patrick Bateman.
Mm-hmm.
Christian Bale, iconic in this role, truly. He is the epitome of who this character was intended to be, with how charming and handsome and funny that he could be, while also being this vicious sociopath that he truly was, and how much joy he got out of killing people.
God, that's a good, I hadn't.
But like, he's fun, but it's also terrifying because it's like, yeah, that. They're really, if you look at history too, there are a lot of serial killers that people say or have said they had no idea. They never would have expected it. They seemed so nice. And he is that guy.
I think you're right about everything you said. Yeah. And Bateman as a character was horribly menacing. And then you've got Christian Bale was phenomenal, right? In it. I guess my only problem with that one is the movie. I don't love the ending. I don't like the ending. I feel like it's a little too ditty or ditney, and it shouldn't have been. And but you're right about the character. Like, as a character, he's a wonderful, aka awful villain.
Yeah.
So good call.
The next one, we talked a little bit about Quentin Tarantino's world and all of the villains that could exist within it.
Right. They're all villains. They're all great.
Yeah, and it's hard to choose just one on my list, but I was, again, I'm trying to spread the love.
Mm-hmm.
And Inglourious Basterds is one that I recently rewatched.
Oh man,
and
me too. I've love it.
Yeah, rewatched it a lot. Not to say that I haven't rewatched a lot of other Quentin Tarantino films, but I was reminded of just how funny and terrifying and just interesting the character of Hans is in Inglourious Basterds.
Worthy of the Oscar. I'm going to speak more about him when it's my turn, but yeah.
Okay.
100% agree with you. In other words, spoiler alert, he's on my list too.
Well, I would not be a woman if I did not add this next one to my list. Oh. In Mean Girls, Regina George.
Damn it! That was my big surprise!
Really?
Yeah, she's on my list too. Are you kidding me?
Oh my God, I love that!
I didn't put it on my list because I knew Amanda would pick it.
Oh, Gretchen, stop trying to make fetch happen.
Oh man, she is truly maniacal. And honestly, there was a moment where I thought about, well, isn't Lindsay Lohan's character, she turns out to be almost just as evil?
Kind
like
of.
Truly,
yeah.
She regains some of that.
She comes back.
Yeah, she turns it around. But man, Regina George is the bane of every middle and high school girl's existence. Everyone had someone like that who truly was just a bully, thought that they were the shit and that their shit don't stink.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she was so funny. It wasn't even, it's so not funny. Even that she was very funny. It's not even that she was so manipulative or sneaky. Like, you knew it was her. You knew what was going on. But it was just the level of pettiness that she was willing to go to.
I respected it.
She's not a Sarah Michelle Gellar in Cruel Intentions behind the scenes manipulating and doing the chess because she's like out there in your face.
Yeah. Yeah, I said it. I'm sorry. Sarah Michelle Gellar was not a convincing villain. Sorry, that's my opinion. But
that is your opinion. You leave her alone.
I'm sorry. She's very sexy in that movie, but yeah. Rachel McAdams, the best part about her as Regina George is that even when she's the worst, she's the absolute worst, you still kind of like her because Rachel McAdams is so good. Like, just always so good.
Truly.
Mm-hmm.
And I love, too, because Rachel McAdams has had the majority of her performances where she's this very sweet, adorable woman who has a little bit of, you know, sass and funny to her. But this one, she is just, she is wild.
Absolutely.
I have a couple that I think aren't a surprise to others.
Okay.
One is Harry Potter and the Order of Phoenix, specifically because of Dolores Umbridge.
Oof, she's so good. Yeah, she's terrible.
She was worse than Voldemort.
I agree with you. That's why I kept looking, you know, when you look at all these, you always, of course, look at lists, trying to see if you forgot something or missed some characters. And I would see all these lists, and they would mention Voldemort, and I'm like, not even close to Umbridge. Like, there's no, I just don't, maybe it was Ralph Fiennes' performance. I don't know, but it never came close to Umbridge to me. Not once.
She was just deplorable as a human being. There was not an ounce of sympathy that I had for her. Oh, she's so terrible. The next one is, I would say, probably one of the most popular picks, but we'll find out when we get to the listener top list.
Mm-hmm.
But Joker in The Dark Knight.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think truly one of the best villains of all time and performances, and especially portrayals of Joker. Like, we are lost without more of that from Heath Ledger. I truly feel like the world mourned him so much more deeply because of that performance. Like, you really just saw, wow. And like, you already knew he was great to begin with, and his career was really ramping up.
It was on fire.
And then you have The Dark Knight, and it's like, wow, this guy is somehow, I still like him. I still like him on screen, but he is horrible. He is terrible. And you can see the breaks and the cracks in his psyche in his performance. Oh, so good.
God, what could have happened if he hadn't, you know, tragically passed away? I always wonder what that third movie would have been, because I know the Joker was going to be part of it in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And instead we got, you know, kind of an okay ending. We could have had a fantastic one.
Got Bane. The next one that I have, because it wouldn't be a top 10 list of villains if we didn't have someone from a crazy breakup.
Okay.
Gone Girl's Amy.
Oh, God. Amazing Amy.
I mean, she was a little too whack. Like, that is one of, and that's a very real
pretty
villain.
Pretty sure I dated her. So
I was going to say, a lot of people have dated women or men that are that crazy. And you're like, lock your doors, change your phone number, change your address. You might actually want to just move at that point. Because otherwise, you could get framed for their murder, and that would be really bad.
Sometimes you got to teach your husband a lesson. I get it. Sometimes you got to pay attention. You know what I mean? Love me better. She was nuts. Rosamund Pike. Oh, my God. So awesome in that role.
So incredible. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
That's a good choice.
We also have an endless array of choices within the show Dexter.
Mm-hmm.
But there can only be one that is the greatest.
Including Dexter.
Including Dexter. But I think he's too much. He's presented too much as, you know, our protagonist.
Mm-hmm.
So I went with Trinity Killer.
John Lithgow. Yeah.
John Lithgow. Oh, my goodness. I mean, what a way for the tables to turn. He flawlessly played the character that was written in terms of someone who is a family man who seems so sweet and so kind and so, you know, charming. He is there to help people. He loves his family. Like, he is just a wholesome individual. And deep down, buried behind all of that life, is a serial killer himself.
Man. Ugh, and when he kills Rita.
Ugh. Oh my God. It's horrible.
Oh my God. Terrifying.
Mm-hmm. All right. So and last but not least, and I was thinking about how to wiggle this one in, and then it dawned on me. I was like, of course, this is the easiest way to get this.
Okay.
Because the character that I'm going with has played more of the protagonist and a hero in some.
Mm-hmm.
But in a TV show, she played more of the villain by the end. And that is Scarlet Witch in WandaVision.
I like that. Yeah, I like that. I think, yeah, I could see that.
She becomes the villain of her own story.
She does. Very good.
The whole town that she's trapped and made them fulfill her fantasy, her dream, what she wants of this perfect world. Is she a character that you can resonate and have empathy with because of what she's gone through? Absolutely. That's what makes her, I think, such a great character, is that she is relatable. She loves so deeply for her family that losing any part of it is unfathomable. And I think that's what makes her truly just, she is so powerful. She can change the entire world. But it's out of love.
Hmm.
And it's out of love for her family and the circle that she has. And so I think she is truly one of the greatest.
Not Agatha? Yeah.
No.
No.
No. No, she's doing exactly what she's supposed to do. She's doing the, I'm going to do whatever it takes to get what I want. She thinks she's doing the right thing because she thinks she's keeping her family intact. But in essence, she's actually hurting a lot more people. So she's a classic villain setup.
Mm-hmm. And Agatha is just all, it's just about power to her. It's like, yeah, okay. True. Yeah, whatever.
And I got to say, in Doctor Strange 2, I thought Scarlet Witch was the best part of that movie. She was phenomenal. I love her villainous turn. I know a lot of people don't love that movie. I don't care. I liked it a lot. So
I liked it and I loved her.
She was not the best part of that movie. The tease of what we could have had was the best part of the
movie. Oh, John Krasinski. But no, she was the best part of the movie.
She's pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah.
She was phenomenal.
That's my top 10 list.
What mouth? I just love that. Love that one. She just basically kills them all. Good for her. She's so badass. All right. That's a good list. Good list, Amanda. All right. So my top 10, mine are in order. So I'm not going to count them down, but they are in order.
10 to 1 to 10.
Starting at 10. Okay. The first one is the operative from Serenity. Now, if you haven't seen Serenity, I get it. It's a movie that's a very small movie. It was a continuation of Firefly, the series, but it was his own thing. And the operative was the character new to that movie. And I absolutely loved his performance because he was just so damn maniacal, and he was dark, menacing, nefarious, and he's in constant pursuit because the allied, United Alliance of Planets or whatever it's called in that series, they were desperate to retrieve River, and he was going to do whatever he could at all costs. And then when he learns of the fact of what they've actually been doing, it's even so horrific, more horrific than what he's done, that he actually walks away to a degree. Like, he has an ounce of humanity. And I just think that's an important element to any villain, is you have to have an element of humanity. And he had a certain code that he lived by, and he wasn't about to throw that away for anyone. And I just love that performance. Chiwetel Ejiofor, I just think, is phenomenal as an actor. And he made a villain without being over the top, without being ridiculous. It was just entertaining, and it stuck with me. It was a role that always stuck with me.
Surprisingly, I have not seen it.
You haven't seen Serenity?
No.
Oh, well.
You're like 20 years late, dude.
Yeah. All right. So my next one, I always say that this is the, in terms of horror, this character has the best look and mannerisms of any horror character of the last 25 years, within the last 25 years. but also does not have the best movies. Like, he's got some one movie that's not great at all. The second one is decent with a great supporting character from Lauren LaVega. And then you have the third movie, which I thought was really good. Art the Clown from Terrifier. I'm always so irritated with the creator, Damien Leone, because he insists, not irritated. I mean, it's good for him because he's kept the rights to this character and to this franchise. So he's making all the profits. No studio is. He could have sold the character a long time ago. But I always go back to this. He's already an iconic looking character. I feel like the mannerisms are already kind of in pop culture. And it's such a perfectly menacing character. It's a new icon in horror that just needs a studio behind it so it can reach greater heights, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And that's never going to happen because I think they're going to end the series with the next movie. But I love Art the Clown. I don't always love the movies. The third one actually finally, like, each movie gets better, right? And a lot of it is because they added Lauren LaVega as the final girl to really complement.
Money helps.
Money. Well, yeah, sure. But the movies are better too. Like, there's more story. The first movie, the story is terrible. It's just not great. It's just gore. It's just gore, torture porn. That's what a lot of it is. But the character's so cool. The character's always like,
he is the creepiest clown to ever exist.
Watching
truly
how menacing he can be, and he can be just joking with his and toying with his victims, and then he can straight up just torture them, or he can just keep joking with them and move on. Like, I just love the character and I love the performance. It's just a character that is definitely in my top 10. I get really bummed when I look at lists and I don't see him on there. And I'm like, I see Art the Clown costumes every Halloween for the last 3 or 4 or 5 years, everywhere. And you're not telling me, like, this isn't a name-based top list? I don't understand. Like, you guys, you're not lovers of those kind of movies, and I get it. But I see them everywhere, so I don't know why they don't pop up more. But Art the Clown.
Nope. But now I want A24 to make a movie called Artful Penny, where it's Art versus Pennywise.
Well, that's the funny thing. I will tell you, Troy, Pennywise is not on my list. Art the Clown is. So I picked a different clown. And it's nothing personal. I think Bill Skarsgård did great, but I just think Art the Clown is more iconic to me at this point. I know that's stupid because Pennywise is from, what, 70s, early 80s? But, you know, it is what it is. My next one's from TV, and that's Gemma Teller from Sons of Anarchy. Mm. And she was so evil, manipulative, and just terrible. Now, I don't necessarily love how the series ended. I really thought the series ended just terrible. But I do love the character. I loved the performance that Katie Sagal put, you know, the acting that she put into that performance. I thought she was phenomenal because at every turn, you don't know if you can trust Gemma, or if she's going to turn on everyone involved. You just don't know. She's an agent of chaos, you know, and she's constantly manipulating the situation. But yet the acting is so strong. There are moments throughout the series where you can instantly empathize with her plight and what the motorcycle club's plight is to either defend her or follow her lead. And that's just a testament to the character and the performance. Like, just love her in that show. Even if I didn't love the ending of the show. Just terrible.
It's a good pick, especially because of the whole what happens inside of her family.
Oh yeah. Lots. There's a lot. You know, it's very
full disclosure, I never really watched the show, but I've seen a little bit enough to know her character.
Well, good. I don't know if it's worth watching the show, but she's great in it. She is. Next is Regina George. You already talked about that. Is butter a carb? You know, there's just all those little quotes that she has throughout the movie that have become very iconic. And, you know, Regina George is just it's a name that strikes fear in the heart of teenage girls. So, just well done. Just a perfect villain, I think. Mm-hmm. A lot of that is because of Rachel McAdams. Then you go to Joker, you know, and Heath Ledger, and I will say, best Joker by far. In fact, not too long ago, I was doing a camping trip, and I watched Joker or Dark Knight, and then I watched Joker the movie, right? And then I watched Joker 2. Well, there's a couple things. One, I think Joaquin Phoenix should have to turn his Oscar back in for Joker 2. I think that should be something that happens.
That's funny.
We talked about this. The movie tanked on purpose
Sure. You keep telling yourself that, buddy. It did not. They wanted to make a lot of money off that movie. It was just a terrible idea.
Studio did. The director did not.
Freaking terrible movie. Absolutely
so boring. So
Anyway, but Heath Ledger, when you watch, okay, take the first Joker, which I like the first Joker, and I think Joaquin Phoenix is very good in it. But you watch him back to back, he doesn't deserve an Oscar anymore. Like, Heath Ledger mops the floor with him in terms of charisma, performance, staying power, entertainment value, just icon status. Like, there's just nothing about Joaquin Phoenix's performance that even comes close to what Heath Ledger did. Nothing. Nothing. And, you know, I would take that fight with anyone. Anyone who says that Joaquin Phoenix did a better job is drunk with insanity, because there's just no way. I mean, Heath Ledger dominated. I can't imagine the kind of career he would have had. It's tragic. And I think the best thing I can say about it is this was last spring that I watched both those together. And that's 15, 16 years after The Dark Knight, and it still holds up. I think you have that first year where there's recency bias and you have a little bit of mournful attachment to the character. I mean, you know, I still feel for Brandon Lee when I watch The Crow, but I can appreciate his performance more the more distance you get from when it first came out, and you're feeling all that emotion, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Heath Ledger still holds up, and I don't think Joker does. So, and then, you know, you watch Batman, and it, you know, it's a totally different kind of villain. So Heath Ledger, he created a archetype, or an archetype of a villain for the next 15, 16 years. Like, he created a type of villain. Like, he recreated what villains are for a long period of time. And I think that's a testament to how great he was.
And it's also, I've always found it fascinating, because if you were to put someone else in that role, some of the things that he says and does are, it could be seen as cheesy, but mm-hmm. for him, they come off as madness. And that is a very fine line to be able to walk through.
Sure.
Jared Leto. There's a weird cough.
He's a method actor. It's Morbin time. Did we get Morbius on the list? No.
Nope.
That's too bad.
Nope. Bummer. Can't say that we did. Yeah.
Damn it.
You guys not even on the honorable mentions list of page 100.
the last villains on the list. Yeah. All right, moving on. So Joffrey Baratheon. I don't know how he has come up yet.
How did we not pick the worst? I am so disappointed in both Troy and I. And I'm very proud of you, Aaron. Good job.
Thank you. Yeah. That is the right answer. Joffrey is terrible. Yep. Terrible.
Yep.
I mean, from the minute you meet him in the first episode,
I wanted to punt that kid
to a pulp. You just, you can't stand him. And then when he dies, it's like the most, it's terrible that you feel so good about a kid drowning
to death in poison. Oh my gosh.
Oh my God. That poison scene, his eyes bugging out. Like, it was just terrible, but also so good. Like, it just felt so good. It felt right.
Yeah.
What should have happened?
You're like, you've earned this, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been one for the death penalty, but his suffering, I was like, you know, warranted.
Yep. Good for him. And then moving on, we've got four left. Okay. Walter White. Now,
Icon.
Yep. Icon. A lot of people pick Gus Fring in our poll, and I'll talk about that when we get to listeners. But Walter White is the villain of that show for me.
Mm-hmm.
And he ruins so many lives. He destroys entire families, including his own. And, you know, just absolutely manipulates and destroys Jesse Pinkman. He is one of the worst people to ever be on television, but also one of the best portrayals of a character, period, by an actor. Bryan Cranston, there aren't many, I think, performances in all of television that even come close to his throughout that series.
I would agree. Once you get past the first season.
Yes.
Once, exactly.
Exactly.
Yep.
Top three. Okay, here we go. Number three. King Kong's got nothing on Denzel. Nothing. Alonzo Harrison training day.
Okay, all right. I love that. That almost made my list.
Oh my God. He got an Oscar. Rightfully so. I mean,
Denzel.
The movie is good, but the performance is phenomenal. Like, he's just, every time he does something, he makes another iconic statement on the world. He's just so good at what he does. So that's my number three. Number two is Hans Landa. You already talked about that, but I do kind of want to add, you know, rewatching it recently as well. When you have that opening scene and, you know, Christoph Waltz does, he comes in, he's having a jovial conversation. He just wants some milk and he's talking, and then he switches to English so he can get down to it. And then it gets maniacal. And then he's like, Shoshana, you know, almost like in a back to a jokey way. And then there are moments throughout, that's a bingo, you know, everything, all of the weird ticks and the second that he can switch from just delightful and jovial to absolute evil is amazing. And he deserved every ounce of that Oscar, every ounce. My number one, this is no surprise. If you ever listen to this show, and if you guys can't guess, I'll be very disappointed in you, but I'll give you each one guess. Who do you think my number one villain in all of film or television is?
You've seen a lot of stuff.
I have seen a lot of stuff.
It's got to be something from a Hitchcock movie.
I'll give you one. Hitchcock is from 2000 and past that, really? The guy's been dead for a while.
Yeah, but you watch it all the time, so it's just like, it just keeps happening.
No, I'm... A weird way to try to get out of that bad call on your part. No, my number one is Walton Goggins as Boyd Crowder in Justified.
That's a good pick.
Best villain.
I was thinking maybe the guy who killed Uncle Ben, but you know, that works too.
That guy's, come on. Which series? Oh, not the Homecoming series.
The only one where he still exists.
No,
okay?
He's in two of them. He's just not in the Marvel one because they suck. Boyd Crowder, Walton Goggins, Justified. I love the character. I love the performance, Walton Goggins. I loved him long before anybody discovered him on White Lotus or Fallout. He's just phenomenal in that role. It's very layered. He's a villain that you never stop rooting for. Even when he keeps doing terrible shit, you just want him to get away with it so he can come back next season. The first season, he's a terrible racist, and they just managed to wash that out completely. And
I don't, it's impressive that you could even like him after that. Cause absolutely. I remember you talking up this show and I started and you loved Walton Goggins in it. And I'm like, he's loving this guy. What the is going on?
Cause he's an absolute racist. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But he wins you over and they somehow he just wasn't racist anymore. And I'm just like, what? And I bought it. I didn't care. Like, they did such a good job of making me believe that. And then as the season goes, and then you get to We Dug Coal Together, which is the best moment, I think, of any television show for me, because it's really about, it says a lot about friendships. And, you know, friendship's very important to me. And I just love that scene. I love that relationship. And I love, even though it's so one-sided for big portions of the series, like, Boyd Crowder cares more for Raylan than Raylan cares for Boyd Crowder. That's just a fact. But you always feel like Raylan does, you know, even though he doesn't want to admit it, he does feel something for him. You know, he does care about him, and friends are friends. You know, we dug coal together. It's just a beautiful, and he can, because he can never admit it. He can just never admit how much he actually cares about him. Just beautiful friendship, beautiful relationship, and love Walton Goggins, man. He's so good, man. He's good in The Shield, too, if you haven't seen that one. That's my list. So
it's a good list.
You want to hear what the listeners picked? Yes, you do.
I'm actually really curious to see where this lines out. And I guarantee you Joffrey's on there.
Yeah. Yeah. Because people aren't weird like you guys and just completely forget one of the best villains of all time.
Silly.
Yeah. Listeners don't suck. That's what I'm going with. All right. So number 10, Anton Chigurh from No Country for Old Men. That's Javier Bardem. I don't like... because I think the movie ended terribly. I'm sorry, I do. It's a fantastic movie until the last 20 minutes. He is a fantastic villain. He deserves to be on the list. I'm fine with him. Then you got Hannibal, Mads Mikkelsen's version from the TV show. And if you haven't seen it, he does a pretty awesome Hannibal. Very charming, very endearing, very relatable, very maniacal. So that's good. Then you go to Walter White. Okay. And then we go to one that nobody has talked about, which shocks me, but I can explain my reasons. What, Thanos?
I figured somebody was going to put Thanos on the list.
I figured somebody was going to put it, yeah.
You guys don't know how to make your own top 10 list? Is that what you're telling me?
Okay, let's be honest. We have sometimes where we make lists and we can't cross over.
I don't do that. I always just make my own list.
Sir, let me talk. We do certain topics where when we make a list, we're not talking the same thing, so that way there is variety in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't think through the possibility that it wasn't explicitly said in the instructions. So we should have just, yeah.
I don't like doing too many lists either, but I will say, but neither one of you did that for Joffrey. You just forgot him, and shame on both of you. All right. You should both be ashamed of yourselves.
Him. Yeah, that's fair.
He was so bad. He didn't deserve to be on the list.
Shut up. But Thanos, now here's, I'll tell you why he's not on my list. And I did think about him, and he was in the top 15. My problem with Thanos is every time I was sitting there and I'm trying to, like, you know, you're whittling your list down, right? You want to get to the top 10, whatever. All I kept thinking is, I love those movies for the heroes, not for Thanos. Thanos is just, yeah, I get what he's saying, and I don't necessarily disagree with his plan, but I don't find Thanos that captivating of a villain. I don't. My thing is, would I watch them do a standalone movie or a standalone TV show? And no, I wouldn't watch Thanos. I just wouldn't care. So to me, he didn't. That's why he didn't make my list. Is that fair? That's
yeah, fair. No, it's fair. Don't get me wrong. He's a great villain. He was great in that franchise, but he is not what made all of it the best.
Sure.
Like, there are others that I think are better than him, obviously.
Now, then we have Hans Landa. Fair enough. We already talked about him. Joker, and that is Heath Ledger. Talked about him. Gus Fring.
Yep. I thought about him.
From Breaking Bad. Now, that's pretty up there. I mean, he's better than Thanos. And he's that's pretty freaking impressive. And he's above Walter White. So why do you think he's so... I mean, Giancarlo Esposito is a great actor. I just don't know if I'd put him above Walter White as a character.
I think it has more to do with the shock of what he did. When you see Giancarlo as an individual, he just seems like very nice. I don't know. He kind of reminds me of Obama, like that personality.
Mm-hmm.
They have the same walking presence. I don't know. But he does some evil shit. But I mean, cartel, you know?
cartel gonna cartel. You know what I mean?
Cartel gonna cartel. Yeah.
That's funny. All right. Well, then what else we got? Pennywise is number 3. No big surprise there. Number 2, none of us have talked about, Homelander. Amanda, do you watch The Boys? I don't even know if you watch The Boys. Do you agree with Homelander? Here's my problem with Homelander. And I think Anthony Starr does a wonderful job. I loved him on Banshee, by the way. I think he's a fun actor to watch. My problem with Homelander is I feel like they molded him too much after current events in the most recent season, and it kind of hurt the character for me, because I want to watch TV to get away. And don't get me wrong, it's always been there. I get that. I'm not taking away from that, but it took me out of the show multiple times. That's my only issue. But I agree. It's a fantastic villain. He's terrible. What about you?
Mm-hmm. I can agree with that. I think he also, it just went too far where he wasn't likable. And also, I'm sorry, I'm not going to lie. The breastfeeding thing, I couldn't really get past that.
Yeah, that was just, you can go too weird, right? Sometimes you just go too weird.
It was a little too weird.
Yeah. It's like they're trying to be weird. Number one, you want to know what number one is? Best villain of the century, according to our listener poll? I don't know if you heard of this guy. Joffrey Baratheon.
Yeah.
Everyone else remembered him. And like by us, it wasn't even close. It was double. He was double everyone else.
Yeah, but once you see the name, it's easier to be like, oh yeah, he sucks. It's remembering that he's the worst.
I didn't need to I remembered.
Yeah, I'm just trying. Okay.
What I do think is funny is Ramsay Bolton wasn't on anybody's list. And he was pretty terrible, but I thought he was a little over the top. So that's why he wouldn't be on mine.
Yeah. Mm.
But man, you could go Game of Thrones. You could watch. You could pick a character from each season.
We could.
If you wanted
I was gonna
to.
Say we could do a villain's royal battle.
Yeah. Like Stannis kills his own daughter. I mean, that was messed up. So I'd put him in the villain category. There's a lot of them that do things that are very villainous. Daenerys, right? Those are all great villains, man. I will say we've had a great run this century so far. Villains rock. Hey, and you can support this show to help pay for the rock. That didn't make any sense, but our show is independently funded through Patreon, and therefore all the expenses come from our own pockets. If you want to go to Patreon, you can help bands support us. And once you sign up, you get immediate access to all the content and your respective tier, including we have a bad movie night for that War of the Worlds terrible movie that we briefly talked about earlier. And that's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. That's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. Troy, let's go to upcoming attractions.
That's right. October 10th, the movie of the millennia. I feel like they keep trying to bring this one back all the time. Tron. This time it's Ares. Mm. It's not a direct sequel to the 2010 Tron Legacy movie, but mankind encounters AI beings for the very first time when a highly sophisticated program, Ares, leaves the digital world for a dangerous mission in the real one. Gillian Anderson and Jared Leto star in this PG-13 reimagining, I guess, of Tron.
Are you excited about this one?
I am, just because Tron, I think, is a cool concept. I mean, I grew up on the original. I thought Legacy was okay. I really was hoping that we would get the continuing story of the ISOs from that movie, but we're going to get something different, and that's okay.
Okay. Just is worth an ask, I guess.
Yeah. It should be good. It'll be fun. Soul on Fire, rated PG, is coming. John O'Leary's story begins with his miraculous recovery from a near-death accident when he was 9 years old. Given no chance of survival, John endures an unbelievable road to recovery with the support of his family, his faith, and community, and the kindness of his all-time idol, Baseball Hall of Fame announcer, Jack Buck. This stars Sean McNamara, William H. Macy, and Devon Franklin.
Hmm.
Then Roofman is what I'm going to go see.
I want to see that.
Eccentric thief Jeffrey Manchester pulls off over 60 daring McDonald's heists, breaking in through rooftops and holding employees hostage. This stars Channing Tatum, Juno Temple. It's rated R. And then finally, Kiss of the Spider-Woman. In an Argentinian prison in 1981, Luis Molina, a gay hairdresser, forms an unusual bond with Marxist Valentin Argyropaz while serving an 8-year sentence. Molina copes by imagining movies starring his fantasy woman, Aurora. This has Jennifer Lopez, Aaron, Luna Diego Luna, and Bill Condon star in Kiss of the Spider, rated R.
Jennifer Lopez is losing some luster for me, really. I hate to say it.
I mean, it's not Selma, but...
Not for me.
Selma's not losing any luster for me. And I've heard
I still love Jennifer Lopez.
I've heard she does a wonderful performance in this, so I'll give it a shot. But I'm going to see Roofman. Is it Pullman or Roofman? It was Roofman, right?
Roofman.
Yeah. Did you say Pullman or did you say Roofman?
Which is different than Roofy Man. That's a completely different movie.
Okay. Pullman is the Chris Pine movie, but I want to see Roofman. I want to make sure. I'm losing my mind here at this point.
Roof.
Got it. Is that it?
That's it for the theater.
Oh, there's more. There's more. Okay.
Well, we have the streaming side.
Which is Amanda.
John Candy, I Like Me.
Yes.
Starring Colin Hanks.
Oh, so excited.
Explores the life of comedian John Candy.
It'd be a really, really good tearjerker.
And that is coming to Amazon Prime. Coming to Paramount Plus is Vicious. A young woman is left a strange present by a late night visitor and quickly realizes she is fighting for her life after slipping down a disturbing rabbit hole contained inside the gift. It has Dakota Fanning, Rachel Blanchard in it, and that is rated R. Ooh. Mm. The Woman in Cabin 10 is coming to Netflix. It follows journalist Lo Blacklock, who is given the travel magazine assignment of a lifetime. Spend a week on a boutique, ultra-luxury cruise ship with only a handful of unimaginably wealthy travelers. Lo's dreamlike experience could not be more perfect until late one night when she witnesses an unspeakable act culminating with a woman being thrown overboard. Making matters worse, the following morning, all of the passengers remain accounted for and the ship sails on as if nothing happened. This has Keira Knightley in it. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Also, you can join our cruise. The Hollywood Outsider Cruise is going in 2026 to Alaska.
It's getting full. So if you want to join up, you better hurry up. It's like the reservations are going to be, the block is almost over. So you need to get into it. Go to thehollywoodoutsider.com, click on look in the show notes, go to thehollywoodoutsider.com, click on any web post that we have that it's a podcast episode, and the link is right there in the show notes. So, boom. Go.
All right. Last but not least, we have The Last Frontier coming to Apple TV+. Mm-hmm. It follows Frank Remnick, the lone U.S. Marshal in charge of the quiet, rugged barrens of Alaska. It stars Jason Clarke, has Haley Bennett in it. And it comes from Blacklist creator John Bokenkamp, correct? So you guys have some special insider thoughts.
Come back next week. We have an interview with John Bokenkamp, the creator of The Blacklist, and also The Last Frontier. And we'll have our review of the show itself.
They already know, though. And I think they like it.
It's going to be good. You're going to like it. All right.
It's fun. It's a very different kind of show for Apple.
Review, Amanda, you saw Shell, which is in theaters now. So Shell is, it feels like a little bit of substance, but let me tell you what it's about. So Samantha Lake is Elizabeth Moss, and she's a middle-aged actress whose main TV role is a love it or hate it cheesy drama. She used to have some notoriety and did not even need to audition. You know, she was offer only, but now she's just one fish amongst the sea. Following the disappointment of not getting yet another role because the crew went with someone younger, shame, Samantha is presented with a recommendation, feel and look younger, by trying Shell services. Well, Shell is run by Zoe Shannon, who's played by Kate Hudson, and she launched Shell into an incredibly successful business venture that the entertainment industry is quick to cling onto. Turns out Zoe is a big fan of Samantha's most notable role and extends a personal invitation to Samantha for her private party. Glamour, wealth, beauty, all of that is radiant in every character Zoe surrounds herself with, except her new project, Samantha. Yet all is not what it seems with Zoe and her company, Shell. When a young woman, Chloe, who's played by Kaya Garber, who I believe is Cindy Crawford's daughter, remember right?
Interesting. Yeah,
there you go, fun fact. That Samantha used to babysit, goes missing, and her own health seems to be declining. She risks everything to find Chloe and hold Shell responsible. So here you go. You got Elizabeth Moss, who you already talked about earlier as a Handmaid's Tale. You love her. You're a big fan. She's a great actress. It's amazing to me how she can change it. She's an attractive woman, but she can make herself look frumpy. She does that very well. Mm-hmm. Kate Hudson is always, she looks just like her mom. She's just a beautiful stunner. But it does sound a lot like The Substance. Is this movie like The Substance?
Sure, a little bit is.
Okay. So,
sure, a little bit is. I think it's, it's interesting timing. I even mentioned this in my written review, like it is a little bit of The Substance, and it's not as good as The Substance. It's Elizabeth Moss and Kate Hudson are great. They really are great in here. But are they Demi Moore? Should have won an Oscar level good?
Probably not.
It is very campy though, too. So I'm gonna forewarn you, this is not what I would have expected for honestly either of them. There's like a 70s sci-fi body horror element to it, but it's very campy.
The performances though, are they, is Elizabeth Moss as good as she always is?
Yeah, she's not as emotionally wrought as Elizabeth Moss can be in some of her performances.
Man, she's always getting put through
the Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah,
she is. But there's still depth to her character in the story in itself, right? Like, we're still exploring her own, self-worth and lack of confidence and trying to reclaim her sexual identity, if you will, of like herself as an individual. There's like a even masturbation scene, but it just doesn't feel like it just doesn't feel as deep and intimate as The Substance, and it's hard to not compare it to that because of the recency.
And honestly, it sounds like it. I did watch the trailer and I'm like, it looks like it. So it does feel like.
But it's not going to have the same. So at the end of The Substance, you're like, whoa.
Yeah, it doesn't have the same impact.
And it's very dark, though. Like, the ending is dark for The Substance, I thought. The ending of Shell, again, more campy and kind of cheesy.
Okay.
This is
more straightforward.
The monster body horror aspect. It truly just did not meet the mark. And there are moments where obviously this is the film that they're trying to give you. Mm-hmm. They're not trying to be serious through the entirety of it. But I think when you're trying to integrate some of those serious elements as like theme, your tone should probably match that a little bit better.
I agree. I think that's fair. Good point. Good point. Well, if $10 is the full price of admission, what do you give Shell?
I gave it $6. I think it's still something to watch. Kate Hudson is always fun to see on screen. Elizabeth Moss, I do like seeing her transformation of her character. So if you're into those types of movies, if you liked or didn't like The Substance, I think is irrelevant because it is a little bit different.
And I saw this was originally coming out last year, and I wonder if they pushed it just because of Substance.
I'm sure.
It's too bad because, I mean, it's an interesting idea, and it's obviously not copying Substance because it was made at the same time. So it's not a ripoff. It's just bad timing, like you said. Like Deep Impact and Armageddon, I guess, back in those days.
Actually, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like both those movies.
I like one of them. And it's the one with the best deep chord driller in the whole goddamn world. That one. Oh, Bruce Willis, where'd you go? All right, and moving on from that one, we're going to go to The Smashing Machine because rock smash. Well, you know what I'm saying. So this is Dwayne Johnson, not The Rock. Here, all right. This is Dwayne Johnson's attempt at an Oscar nomination or street cred, whatever we want to do. He's trying to take some chances as an actor, and good for him. I have no problem with that. I think Dwayne Johnson actually has the ability to be a much better actor than a lot of the stuff we've seen him in. Now, The Smashing Machine is written and directed by Benny Safdie. It stars Dwayne Johnson and Emily Blunt, and I'm trying to think, like, how do I want to put this? I mean, when it comes to, just so you know, Benny Safdie, he was a writer of Uncut Gems. He's involved in Good Time, et cetera, et cetera. So he's known for this shot, this kind of shot film. The way that the film is shot, it's very soft lenses. It's handheld cameras. It's about the story of Mark Kerr, the UFC fighter, between the years 1997 and 2000. And he's overcoming drug addiction. He has a volatile relationship with his girlfriend, Dawn, who's played by Emily Blunt. This is when UFC fighting was starting to emerge. It was starting to emerge in Japan before it became a big deal. People made millions off it. And also, there's a possibility that he could eventually fight his best friend, Mark Coleman, who's played by Ryan Bader, who does a nice performance. I'm going to try and make this short and sweet, okay? When it comes to performances, I think Dwayne Johnson does an admirable job. The special effects in this movie are phenomenal. The fact that how close they get him, Dwayne Johnson, to look like Mark Kerr is impressive. And the credits, you actually get to see the real Mark Kerr basically mumbling to himself at the grocery store. But that's a whole other story. That's just a weird freaking way to go. But whatever. It's the resemblance is uncanny. I think they do a wonderful job with aesthetics and special effects and practical makeup. That said, I feel like Dwayne Johnson is playing a version of Dwayne Johnson. It's a much more muted, quiet, even keel version. But there are a couple scenes where he gets to just lose his shit. One scene in particular between he and Dawn, where Emily Blunt reminds you that she is freaking Emily Blunt and she should have had an Oscar by now. And also Dwayne Johnson holds his own, which is very impressive. Like, there's a big blow up between the two of them because, again, toxic, volatile relationship. And I think both actors, that's the best scene in the movie. It's the best scene in the movie. And the rest of the movie is boring as hell. I'm bored. I'm so bored. And I love character dramas. I have no problem with slow pacing. I have no problem with slow burns. It's not a matter of that. There's little emotion. There's little connection. Everything is kind of rushed. His storyline is very rushed. You know, there's a drug addiction portion to his storyline where he has a terrible thing happens to him, right, that gets him to go to rehab or to try to confront his problem. And we don't even see it. We just hear about it. Like, all the really important elements that create audience emotion and engagement are not in the movie. I don't think they do a very good job, except a couple fighting scenes. There's a couple hits that really impact you. But overall, like, the emotional connection is missing. It's just not here. And that's what you need in a character piece like this to accommodate longer, looser pacing. And I also don't like the way that the film is shot. I think there's no reason to shoot it like this. It's all, like I said, soft lenses. So it gives it kind of that late 70s, early 80s vibe. I don't know, that Scorsese-ish touch that so many independent filmmakers love to jump on. The score is kind of eclectic and it doesn't really work. You have two good actors that are just squandered. That's what I ended up with. I just feel like there was very little emotion, very little connection. And in a film like this, you either have to have just that rah, rah, rah storyline, or if you're going to do a storyline, you know, it's a biography and he's going to have ups and downs and they're trying to convey the fact that he really struggles with the idea of losing. It's hard for him. Then you need to make it impact the audience, and it's not there. I don't care how long the standing ovation was. I don't care how long at the festival when it premiered, people cheered and applauded. I think that has to do with you're surrounded in a room by people that love you. That makes it, and you're doing something a little different. You're not doing the big bravado, running into a room and you're Hobbs, kicking ass, taking names. You're not doing that. It's a much more restrained, layered performance. And I respect him for doing this. I actually admire him for stepping outside of his comfort zone. He obviously has the talent. I've always thought The Rock is a very charismatic actor. None of this is on him. This is all in the direction, the writing, and the choices. It's edited, clunky. I don't like handheld camera. That time has gone. I'm really tired of it. There's a place for it. It's not here. And it just doesn't work, ultimately. Emily Blunt comes off great because she's awesome. And by God, she's always awesome. But by the end, I hate to say this. This rarely happens to me. This rarely happens to me. I am one of those completionists, I guess, if you want to call it that. When I go to see a movie, I want to see how it ends. Even if I'm not enjoying it all the way, I want to see how it ends. Because I'm like, maybe this will connect all the pieces. I've had movies. You've had movies where that happened, right? I just wanted it over. And that's not a good sign. That's not a good sign. I can't recommend this one to you. If you're a big UFC fan, you might want to go just for the history. Or if you're a fan of actors going outside the range, their typical what you've seen range, then it's good for that. I see no way that The Rock gets an Oscar nomination for this, but I mean, I've seen weirder things, so wouldn't completely surprise me. He's beloved in Hollywood, so that helps. But if $10 is the full price of admission, I give The Smashing Machine $350. Yeah, sorry. And it's very, very predictable. A movie that, good luck figuring it out from the beginning, that we both saw was Good Boy. And he's the goodest boy. He's the best boy. You got
he
the
really
pet,
is.
You got to pet this little guy. Right?
I did. Aww. I did.
Well, Indy is a dog. This is a movie that's shot from the perspective of a freaking dog. I'm not exaggerating. That's literally the plot. The whole movie is from the dog's perspective. And I love that.
All I knew going in was it's a horror movie with a dog. That's all I needed to know. And I was ready to be in line.
Basically, his human, his owner, Todd, it leaves his city life to move into the old family home that's kind of known because we hear in conversations with Todd and his sister on the phone, like that's kind of giving us the backstory, and also old videotapes that the dog watches with Todd, that sort of thing. That's how we get the backstory of what's going on and the current elements. And basically, there's some kind of force in them there woods. Think of it like a dog taking on Evil Dead in many respects. And so everything is shot from the dog's perspective. And the director, Ben Lienberg, he shot this over, I believe, 300 days, I think, something like that. Exceptional amount of time it took him to shoot this. And everything is literally from the dog's perspective. So the way that he described it is, I wanted to make a movie where, you know how dogs are always hearing noises and looking into corners and you don't know what they're looking at or hearing. This is a movie about that. And it very much is that. And I, for one, thought it was very well done. I love the mechanics of it. I love how it's shot. I love how the dog is seeing shadows that Todd doesn't see, because everything is literally from the dog's perspective. Mm-hmm. The story is not as strong as it needed to be. I think so much more could have been done with this. And I'm not someone, you should never gauge a movie on your expectations. So my expectations were zero. I didn't know what to expect. I'm just like, that's a horror movie shot from a dog's perspective. But once the movie's done, the story could have been better told. And I don't like how it builds and then it resolves. I feel like the resolution is not good. But the movie itself is still worth seeing, in my opinion. What did you think of Good Boy?
Oh, first of all, you're right. He is the goodest boy. And he is so, so good as a little actor.
He's a great actor.
I was so impressed. I mean, first of all,
this is the director's dog, I think.
It is. It's his own dog. Yeah. So, Ben, I don't know what you are doing with your life. I hear and see that you're directing movies, but maybe you should also be a dog whisperer.
Yes.
Because...
or a horror movie dog whisperer. That's what you should do.
It was very Caesar Milan watching this dog respond to everything that this guy is saying to do or not to do. Mm-hmm. And you could tell that he has the direction, the dog, Indy, has the direction of what to do, and he's fully acting it out. It is the craziest thing to watch.
So well done. So well done.
Air Bud getting a remake, this changes things. Okay? Okay?
Yeah.
But I wholeheartedly agree with you. I feel like the movie was really, really great in so many ways, but where the story ends, especially when you try to hit that climax, it doesn't really hit the climax. And so it feels like you're going through the film more at an even keel pace, mm-hmm. With like, you know, moments of tension and things like that, which are great. But where the story ended up at, it feels a little flat comparatively. So I would have liked a little bit more there, but ultimately I still think it's a good movie. You should absolutely check it out, if not for anything, for seeing the way this movie is shot and edited and directed, because Aaron described it perfectly. You really do get to see it on the dog's even level, his height, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we are following him as if he is our focal point.
Like, you never see and a full face because the dog is all, you know, it's always from the dog's viewpoint.
Right.
It's really cool.
And like, you still get to learn about what his human Todd and is going through in the context of his story. So therefore understanding the surroundings, mm-hmm. for Indy. And it's really well done. And I feel like it deserves a lot of recognition simply, if not for anything, just for that.
Yeah. I think if the same concept was used in a strong, you know, someone who, I don't know, a stronger reputation for writing, something along those lines. I don't want to take away from him. I think I'm sure it's very hard to write this, but it just, the resolution, it didn't work for me. That's really all, ultimately. I liked where the story was going up until then. It's just a matter of how it resolved. And you might feel completely different. You might think it's fantastic. You know, it's all right in what you think. Mm-hmm. But there, I would love to see this done again in a different kind of genre. Like, Good Boy 2. And it's a slasher movie. I don't know. Like, there's so many ways to do it.
That's a cute idea.
Because this reminds
me. Air Bud.
Yes, literally. Because it reminds me very much. One of my favorite really low budget horror movies. I was telling Amanda this when we saw it. It's a movie called Bad Moon. It's a really, really low budget, cheesy horror movie where the dog, Thor, is actually instrumental in the movie being told, like how it plays out. And I love that. The reason why I love that movie is because the dog is the star. And they don't sell it that way. They never sold it that way. But when you watch the movie, the dog, you're watching from the dog's perspective almost the entire movie, and it's great. This is 100% from the dog's perspective, and I love this, and I would love to see it done in a different genre, for sure. Love it. Love the idea, just the execution. It's really the end. So I give it $6.
Same.
Okay. All right. Well, any recent film or TV recommendations before we head out of here? Troy?
Morning Show's back. Firing on all cylinders as it should be. It's a couple months after the women have taken over the newly formed network. So yeah, just really good stories around the campfire. There's one that's developing about, you know, toxic waste. And then of course, Corey is out doing Corey things. So check it out. It's for sure.
It got renewed again for season 5.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
It should. It's a great show. It's really a great show. I was worried about the first season on how the whole Me Too thing about it and the kind of similarities to the Matt Lauer incident. Mm-hmm. But once they get past that first season, man, it works. It really does.
Amanda, anything from you?
Yeah. So I caught Wayward. I finished that with Toni Collette. Toni, if you go Collette back to our fall TV preview, you can actually hear about all these shows that are just dropping.
Mm-hmm.
And? But oh man, she's great.
She's like a cult leader, right? That's the idea. This is a show from Mae Martin is the creator of this one.
Yep,
and
you got it. Yep, right nail on the head. It's interesting. It's somewhat predictable, but it is a fun watch. Like, it's very entertaining and at times intense.
It's on Netflix.
And still not tied into Wayward Pines at all.
You'll just have to watch to find out. The other thing that I caught is, and I'm a little bit late on it, but this was due to Aaron's recommendation where I was like, okay, I need to watch this ASAP.
Well, let me already talk about it. So why are you talking about it again?
Because I want to say that it is good. Damn it. You know what, Troy? Leave me be. Damn. This is my moment.
What's the show?
Dexter Resurrection is on Paramount Plus.
Okay.
Love the original Dexter. New Blood. I liked it. Didn't think it was amazing. This feels like it's going back to its roots. A lot of fun performances and guest appearances in here. And again, I just really love that it felt like I was going back into some of the original Dexter episodes.
Did you finish it?
I did.
Do you agree with me that if they never make another episode, you're good with it? I'm good. This, I thought it had a perfect ending. I'm like, you finally got the ending right. Mm-hmm. I almost don't want them to come back and ruin it.
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
Okay. Well, that's good. Good to know. All right, guys. Well, that's it. I will mention I did see High Potential. I've seen the first few episodes. It's on Hulu as well as ABC when it ends. I love Caitlin Olsen as this character. It's a fun procedural, and it's holding up for season two. So, you know, if you like the first season, you're going to keep liking it. It's really enjoyable. And it's weird to see that James Rodriguez is directing episodes, but yeah, he directed the finale, he directed the premiere. He's all over the directing on this show. I wish he'd show up as a character, like maybe Sean Spencer shows up and solves a little crime with her. I don't know. All right, that's it, guys. Remember, the next time you head to a theater, stream comfortably on your couch, buy some popcorn.